going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
With the 27th pick in the 2025 NFL Draft, the Baltimore Ravens select Malachi Starks, defensive back, Georgia.
I just think it was remarkable, you know, the way that he could discuss football, his awareness, his ability to call out the plays from their defense before we even showed the plays, just based on formation. His ability to dissect and talk about what happened in any given play and to know what his teammates were doing in any given play. I mean, it was like he was a coach. And, you know, we just, when he got up, we just were all kind of like looking at each other. And we, you know, we use a grading scale. We grade every interview. And a 7 is the best. And across the board, he got straight 7s. So it was just super impressive. I haven't seen that type of detail in a long time.
I feel like it was a really good place for me to be, just with the type of organization that they run and, you know, the history they have there as well. Just the things that they've been doing the last few years, I think it's a great fit for me. Just to come in and learn from a guy like Kyle Hamilton and a lot of vets in the room like Marlon Humphrey, I mean, I think it's amazing, and I think I fit the culture very well.
So you heard from Eric DaCosta last night after the draft, where they had the post first round press conference, and they raved about Malachi Starks, called him a red star prospect. They also, and the other part is Emenwari's still on the board, so
yeah.
It's not one of those things where they say he's our favorite guy, but we would never know because the other guy was gone. They obviously like this kid more than Emenwari. They take him at 27. And Jason, what's interesting, and I'm sure this has happened before, but I couldn't remember it. All the mocks, not all, but most of the mocks had them taking Starks at 27. You had them taking Starks at 27. Very rarely does that work out that way when it's so deep down in the draft, but the Ravens got their man at 27.
Yeah, it's not a surprise. It broke the way we thought it would break. A lot of the names that you saw linked to the Ravens early in this process, the Harmons of the world, the Shamar Stewarts, I told you guys, those dudes are going to be long gone before the Ravens pick.
Booker.
Walter Nolan, people. I'm not sure he's a first-round pick. Really? I'm kind of surprised he didn't go even a few picks higher. So tapping into that first tier of edge or D-tackle was, to me, going to be a pipe dream. So it broke how we thought it would break. There's some second-tier pass rushers there, like the kid from BC. There's a bunch of corners still there, but this is not a great corner class. And some of the top ones have some warts, injuries or otherwise. Some don't have ideal size. Even the kid Denver took. I mean, that's a small slot. Like, there's no – he's not going to get any taller. He's not going to be able to play the boundary. He's not going to get that much more physical. It sort of is what it is. Now, if that's what you're looking for, to try to put your defense over the top, so be it. So it broke how we thought it would break. And then there'd be a bunch of offensive linemen, including a potential top 10 pick coming off a serious knee injury, who I told you, if the Ravens don't take him, then Andy Reid or Howie Roseman will. He's going to go in the first round, and he's going to go there. And that's Simmons. And I'm sure they at least thought a little bit about Simmons. But it's clear that they had great conviction in Malachi Starks. And all things being even remotely close to even, Malachi Starks would be the pick. And as Bone and I discussed quite a bit on the show yesterday, the more I thought about this, the more I became convinced it was Starks, based on a multitude of potential sort of this guy versus this guy, this guy versus that guy, this guy versus this whole group of players, because of their core beliefs. And to me, Eric DaCosta, one of the things he believes the most about football roster construction is, I want all the athletes who can play the ball in the air, and we will manufacture pass rush. Give me a 6 footer and a 6 foot 3 and a 5 foot 9 and a 6 foot 1 collection of corners and safeties who have flexible hips, who can play in the slot, who can play in the boundary. Some can mimic what we ask our linebackers to do. Guys who can blitz from the slot. Guys who can be physical in the run game. Guys who could play in the box or toggle at free safety. That wets their whistle more than anything else. And we'll figure out the other stuff. We can get Van Noy off the scrap heap. We can get Justin Houston off the scrap heap. We can get Clowney off the scrap heap. We'll be all right.
Yeah.
We can manufacture that. We can't manufacture athletes on the back end who can disrupt the ball in flight. And it fell apart for a big part of this year because the free safety wasn't a free safety. And you just go back to, how did we get here? All the six packs we've done, biggest strengths of the team, biggest weaknesses, biggest need. Why did Roquan go from a $20 million linebacker to an $8 million linebacker? Because he didn't have Kyle Hamilton playing next to him as much. How can they get Kyle Hamilton playing next to him as much? You got to get another safety back there who can play the ball in flight, who can allow them to really move Kyle Hamilton as much as they want. Where you've got two other guys in certain cover two looks that you'd rather have on the back end so that Kyle Hamilton can help out Roquan Smith within 10 to 15 yards in the line of scrimmage. That was a primary need, maybe the biggest need on the football team. And this draft had multiple kids who were worthy of the 27th pick overall, if not higher.
That's what makes Starks so valuable, is it's one player, but it's a domino effect on this defense, because having him on the back end, and this is someone who's a 3-year starter, he was a first-team All-American, he was a second-team All-American, talked about his ball skills, he's a willing tackler, he can play man-to-man, it frees up Kyle Hamilton, and it helps you all along your defense in doing that. And they commit so much to this secondary. And I dug into it deep, and we'll get into it more during TMI. But 3 out of the past 4 first rounds, they have taken someone in the secondary.
Jason, I want to follow up on what you're saying, because this pick, assuming Malachi Starks is who they expect him to be, this is almost a 3-for-1, because what it does is you get that safety, which lets Kyle Hamilton be the jackknife guy who was the playmaker, first-team All-Pro 2 years ago.
Yes.
Oh, and in doing so, he helps Roquan Smith closer to the line of scrimmage and frees Roquan up to do what he does best. So if everybody's playing at their best level, now you've made two other guys better and made the defense better by selecting this guy.
Well, and you have now 3 players who you trust, again, based on matchup, down, distance. You trust them more to one degree or another, but you have a certain amount of trust in now Malachi Starks, Ardarius Washington, Kyle Hamilton, all playing free safety for you based on the situation. Last year, until they moved Kyle Hamilton back there, and then he helped Ardarius come along, they were playing a lot of games last year in which they had no one. Like, it was like, this is a joke. We're talking about Eddie Jackson and
that
Marcus.
That was fun, right?
Like, that was their safety pair for a lot of key games against good offenses and good offenses in the AFC. So we've gone from that to this. Oh, yeah, and we also now have a coordinator who in year 2 should be a lot better, and he has one of the best, most creative secondary defensive coaching minds in football, Chuck Pagano, helping him out. And Chuck Pagano's here from the day Starks gets in the building, not Dean Pease coming in October to try to, like, put Humpty Dumpty back together again. All of that should bode really well. And you think about this franchise, and you think about the length and breadth of it, and DaCosta's been here an incredibly long time. And I just think the ghost of Ed Reed is still in that building everywhere.
They've been chasing.
They had arguably the greatest free safety in NFL history at an era where the game was starting to change from run-based to pass-based, where second down was becoming a throwing down, and for some teams, first down, the Andy Reid teams, the really advanced teams, first down was starting to become a throwing down, right? Kyle Shanahan offense is starting to come in at the end of Ed Reed's career. First down could be a throwing down. And they had the blessing, and maybe partly the curse, of seeing the best to ever do it do it for as long as he did, almost his entire career here. Yeah. A little bit of Houston and the Jets at the end or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, and I think they saw the impact that had, and I think they've been sort of in their own way chasing it. And frankly, I'd rather see them invest draft capital in it than waste the money they wasted on Earl Thomas or, I mean, even, you know.
Marcus.
Definitely. I mean, even Weddle, like he kind of hit the wall pretty early in that contract in terms of what they could ask him to do anymore. So this is who they are. This is what they believe in. This is quintessential Ravens moves. And we'll talk more through the course of this show, previewing tonight and day two and the rest of the draft. They're certainly going to have to lean into the D tackle on the edge of it all.
Yes.
And maybe and linebacker,
yes,
too. And maybe some of that starts a few hours from now.
Some interesting names on the board, including a quarterback that a lot of people expected to get drafted yesterday that did not. We'll get into that a little bit later. But we have a huge Friday show. We get started guest-wise, 3 o'clock. Our friend Ariel Epstein, the prop queen, Beltway Ben, they have their best bets heading into the weekend. At 4 o'clock, NBA playoffs going on. Our NBA insider, Mo Hamilton, updates us on what he's seeing in the playoffs thus far. And the Pittsburgh Steelers did not draft a quarterback. They got Derek Harmon, defensive tackle out of Oregon. Brooke Pryor covers the Steelers for ESPN. What does she think about what they did and what they didn't do? She joins us at 5. We're done at 5:30 for Baltimore Baseball Tonight. Bone and Ryan Ripken as the Orioles and Tigers start a 3-game series tonight at 6:30.
Yeah, it's interesting. We started talking probably 2 or 3 weeks ago a little bit more about the draft, and I told you I'd been talking to Bobby D quite a bit.
Yeah.
And Shamar Stewart and Derek Harmon were two kids he loved, two kids he told us, hey, and I told you guys, hey, they look like they belong in the AFC North. Like, I don't know if those kids are going to get there to the Ravens because, like, the Bengals, they got to get through the Bengals and the Steelers to get there.
Yeah.
And sure enough,
they did not.
They're both in the AFC North. They did not get even really close to where the Ravens could have picked them. And it's going to be really interesting to sort of chart their course moving forward. Do the Steelers take a quarterback tonight? Do the Browns take a quarterback tonight? Do the Bengals spend the rest of their draft on nothing but defense? We'll get into that before we talk to Brooke as well.
Coming up next, though, night two of the draft, rounds 2 and 3 are this evening. What are our expectations for the Ravens in day two of the draft? We're going to tell you next.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Next here on The Fan. Night two of the NFL draft starts tonight at 7, rounds 2 and 3. Before we start looking ahead, I do want to look back because I felt, maybe you guys will disagree, but I thought Eric said something out loud that surprised me a little bit last night after round 1. He was asked about trading up.
I'm not really, you know, I feel like you guys ask me this question every year. I'm not a big believer in trading up. I just don't think that the data supports that, generally speaking. But, you know, we always look at it potentially. And again, I think it's assessing what other teams are going to do. It's kind of the flow of the draft. As you get to, you know, we're picking 27. As you get to, say, 18 or 19, that's when you might consider trading up. But then you look at the players that are still there and you start looking at each pick, and every time a player gets taken outside your range or out of your sequence, you're like, okay. And you finally get to the point where we're like, okay, there's 3 or 4 guys. We don't have to trade up. We're going to get 1 or 3 or 4 of these guys. We feel happy with all these guys and we're good to go. So when that happens, you know, you're at peace. It's a good place to be.
Eric DaCosta, don't ever expect the Ravens to trade up in a draft if he's running the show.
This is his 7th draft. I've said it multiple times. The highest round he's traded up was the 3rd round in his first draft. The proof is in the pudding. He just doesn't believe in it.
No, they have core beliefs, and they don't really stray from them. And it's when you have built a strong roster, when you're already sitting on 11 picks, and when teams in front of you will freak out and panic and invariably let players that you like more than them fall to you, then all those factors kind of play to your strength and to your core beliefs and make it even, frankly, easier for you to just sit back and see who's there when you're picking and either take the guy you like the best or let somebody come up to reach for a quarterback or some other position that they are just so desperate for. Excuse me, that they pay an obscene price. And, like, trust me, as much as they love Malachi Starks, if somebody made them the offer that Atlanta made to Sean Payton, I think they're taking it.
Yeah.
I'd be stunned if they didn't take it. And they'd say, you know what? There's a safety from Notre Dame. We might not be as good.
But Xavier Watts.
We're going to be pretty good for us from day one. And
hey, Emin Wari's still out there.
There's plenty of other things we could do. You're going to give us next year's one, and we don't think you're going to be that good anyway. So that's going to be a pretty, like, that could be a pick in the teens. Yeah. That we can't get any other way unless our quarterback gets hurt and our whole season tanks. Yeah. So that's who they are. And, you know, this thing is, why does Howie Roseman look really smart every year? Because he's already built a great roster. Yes. He can take risks when they work on injuries, et cetera, like Simmons or Campbell. I think he would have taken Simmons if Campbell was already gone. Why did Andy Reid take that kid? Why did I tell you he's going to the Eagles or the Chiefs? I'm just telling you, if he's there, he's going to go there. Because they built up such a culture of winning, and they built up such a roster that it's we can redshirt him. And if he's our best left tackle, you know, by week 10, we're going to play him. And if he's not, I bet by week 1, 2026, he's our best left tackle. And the Ravens are in that same sort of position. So, yeah, it's good to be good at your job. It's good to not have a ton of immediate holes you need to fill. And it's good to be sitting on 11 draft selections.
So they do have 10 draft selections left. Two of which are tonight, the 27th pick in both the second and third round. What are you looking for Eric DaCosta to accomplish this evening?
Well, I think for me, the most interesting sort of, I don't know, phenomenon to watch is how much do they like this second tier of, let's just call them defensive line / edge, and how much do they like the group that's beneath it? And Bobby D thinks there's fourth and fifth round D tackles that they, including two kids from Maryland, who they might like really almost as much as this next wave that's going to come. So I don't know that this is going to be as, we're going to get to a point here, and maybe it's the second pick tonight, where need in terms of edge factors in more, need in terms of pass rush, I should say, factors in more. But I don't know that they have to do it here. I think this could be a best player available.
Which could be a corner.
It could be. It certainly could be a corner. But some of the names I'm keeping an eye on, Schlesinger, the linebacker from UCLA. I don't know if he's going to be there or not. There were some people who preferred him to Campbell because of, Campbell's got a knee situation. And I don't know. I don't think some of these teams were as high on Campbell, the Alabama linebacker, as some of the mock drafters would have you believe. So this kid Schweisinger might be the best linebacker in the draft. And he plays next to Roquan for a year, and maybe he replaces Roquan in a year. His coverage skills, his instincts, just everything about him, man, he looks like he steps into this place and immediately, deserves that Ravens sticker on his helmet. Alfred Collins, a D tackle out of Texas. Some people would tell you he doesn't have any pass rush. I don't know. There's others who would say if you move him around a little bit and you fight for some matchups for him, you might be surprised. That's somebody who, I think might make some sense for them. TJ Sampson, a D tackle out of South Carolina. Bobby D thinks he's another one who has more pass rush and way more position flexibility than some are giving him credit for. Is he a three technique a little bit too much like Matabike? I don't know. I mean, I think you're creative. You find different ways to get different people on the football field. Shamar Turner would be another D tackle. And then look, we talked about Milroe a lot.
If he's sitting there.
If he's there and you do still feel like this is a generational defensive line draft and we're really good at finding those guys and we'll come away with one Friday, but if we don't take this quarterback now, we're not going to get another shot at him. That's where I wonder if this can become a luxury pick for them, because they still have 9 more of these after them. And they're going to go, there's no doubt in my mind, no matter what happens tonight, they're going to go into Saturday we might take 3 D tackles today.
Yeah.
There's still 3 we'd be real happy to take and think could help us. some short term more than others, but at least some of them could help us day one.
I got a name for you, and you know my wheelhouse is Oregon. If Jordan Burch is sitting there when they pick in the second round, that's a kid when he's motivated. That's an absolute game wrecker. Now, motivation has been an issue for him at times, but I would trust them late in the second round. You take him and let Chuck Smith get his hands on him a little bit. That kid.
That's the other Oregon tackle.
Yes. Yeah, he's like an edge guy. Yes. Yeah. When he's motivated, he was as good or better than Kayvon Thibodeau was at Oregon, but there have been motivation issues for him. He's expected to go in this round.
Well, and they're all going to have warts or blemishes at some point. Now, again, I don't really think there was more than 8 to 10 blue chippers in this whole draft. And maybe I'm even skewing a little high. But they will get there, and we'll come here on Monday, and we'll have 3 or 4 names to pour over that could help this D-line. But I don't know that it's pick 54.
Inside Access here on a Friday. Coming up next, we get to the Orioles, and they avoided the sweep last night in Washington against the Nationals. What do we think of the O's last evening? We will tell you next here on The Fan.
The hitters, that was the key for me, is 0-1 on so many guys and allowed them to expand the strike zone a little bit. One mistake to Bell, that was pretty much it on the evening. He threw the ball so well.
We had a plan going into it, obviously. We do all the time. And, you know, I think a lot of it was just trusting Rutch back there. He called a great game. Trusting what was working and just kind of rolling with it and attacking with whatever was called.
You heard from Brandon Hyde, and then you heard from the man himself, Cade Povich. Cade Povich, you could argue, outpitched Mackenzie Gore last night, going 6 2/3, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. Would have gotten through 7 if Gunnar Henderson doesn't boot the ground ball with 2 outs in the 7th. Orioles beat the Nationals. It wasn't pretty, but they win 2-1 last night.
I'm just going to say something about the booting of the ball real quick. Okay, I'm going to keep reinforcing this because these things are not accidents. These things are not the baseball gods. These things are baked into the Orioles' cake. When you draft all these shortstops and you play them at 3 different positions every week all the way through the minors and no one really gets bled into a certain position, and when you know in your heart of hearts, like, had this thing really worked out the way you thought it was going to work out and you didn't trade Joey Ortiz is your shortstop and Gunnar Henderson is your third baseman, and Jordan Westberg's your second baseman. Like, that's where it was going. And then they drafted Jackson and thought Jackson would be a shortstop. Jackson will never be a shortstop. And Gunnar would be a better third baseman than a shortstop. But, like, the idea that none of these kids are even league average fielding-wise, let alone truly special. Like, for a team that tanked and lost 110 games to try to then be in a position to prize player development, why are none of them any good in the field? And I'm telling you why. Because none of them had a set position in the minors. Because position flexibility matters. And all the crap that's they believe matters. In. Why do none of their pitchers, when somebody goes 6 innings, why do we do jumping jacks? Because they all piggybacked in the minors. Nobody got stretched up. Nobody got built out. Nobody pitched through a whole lot of adversity. Nobody ever knew what it had, what it felt like to try to throw at 90% or 89% at pitch number 90, let alone pitch number 85, because they never got there. Okay, that out of the way, Slim was Slim on the road. That was huge. That was massive. And for me, the key was there was a key stretch of that game where he got a first pitch strike on 16 of 17 guys. You let him do that against a lineup that is no great shakes, and that is a lot of young guys who will chase a little bit and who will expand. And even on a night where he doesn't have great swing and miss stuff, he's got enough of a repertoire that he can throw in the zone. If he's got strike one, it opens everything up for him. And that was awesome to see.
I thought the big difference for him last night getting the swing and miss was with the sweeper.
Yes.
And he threw the sweeper a heck of a lot more than we were accustomed to seeing. 28 fastballs compared to 26 sweepers. And he got 5 whiffs on that sweeper, which I thought was huge. And that was his second longest start of his career. The longest one was against the White Sox, who were historically bad, in September last year. This was a big spot for him because he got his brains beat in at Camden Yards last Friday, giving up the 3 home runs, 7 earned runs. He didn't even complete 4 innings. To go out there and especially go toe-to-toe with Mackenzie Gore and out-duel him was huge.
Bullpen came in with no margin for error and got the job done. Felix got himself in a little bit of trouble in the bottom of the 9th, where he probably, if he just slows, because if you watch that play over, Ruiz isn't even running hard. If he just takes his time, picks the ball up and throws it first. He's got the out, but he tried to do the whole in one motion thing and overran the ball. They put in a pinch runner, he steals second, but he's able to get the save regardless.
Look, anytime he pitches an inning and doesn't give up a run, I'm going to take that as a win. Like, this is still not, this is not Higante. This is not, you know, the mountain. He's like, I don't know.
Still
like,
real good.
Like a peak, right? Wouldn't you say like a peak, not as big as a mountain? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
a workshop.
He's still working through some stuff, but him at 75-80% is still the best power arm on this team, on this team by far.
I know we're going to get into the offense on the other side, but this was the first time all season long that the Orioles won a game and didn't score five runs. And heading into last night, when they scored three or fewer runs, they were 0-12, one of just three teams that hadn't won a game scoring three runs or less. You have to be able to win in a multitude of ways if you're going to get anywhere near October.
Jason, you've watched as much Cade Povich as anybody. So what did you see last night that you feel is replicable, that he can, that that will be successful moving forward?
Well, Bone talked about the kind of leaning on the sweeper. Like, can he find early in a game a secondary pitch that's going to help him get a little more chase than not? I still think the curveball can be a weapon for him. I mean, he only threw 10 of them. He did get four called strikes or whiffs. So, like, I still think trusting that curveball. He pitches backwards sometimes, and that's when I feel like he's at his most effective from a swing and miss and strikeout perspective. Again, not that that's going to be his hallmark, but that's something I think coming off a start like this, he could lean into. But like, also fastball command. I mean, he got 12 called strikes on his four seamer. Like, and a lot of those were early in counts, and a lot of those helped him get to, you know, 0-1. I don't know. Like, he kind of presented himself to me a little bit, like almost like IDGAF.
I see what you're going with that. Going.
After getting his brains beat in, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm gonna get sent back down or whatever, I'm gonna kind of do it my way.
It couldn't be like Friday, because walks really hadn't been an issue with him prior to Friday this season. But he had five walks. Where yesterday, like you're saying, Jason, you're pounding the strike zone. 60 of the 87 pitches were for strikes.
The other thing, the run he did give up was something we've seen a lot from Cade Povich. He gets ahead, I think, of Bell, 0-2, and then gets way too much of the strike zone of the 0-2 pitch, and Bell punches it out to the outfield for a base hit.
And look, I'm going to point this out because I pointed it out with Sagano. This is not a good lineup, and that is a terrible lineup against lefties. That is a terrible like. And it starts from you get a lefty matchup on Wood instead of a righty, who he's there. You find a righty who could throw the ball by him right now. So I just think we have to be cognizant of that. Like, that's not a good baseball team, and that is not a good hitting baseball team. Like, nor are the Reds, and really nor are the Guardians. So, like, I'm just saying.
But it's a major league team.
It's but I'm not going to go gaga because I know what I'm seeing, and I know what he's up against, and it was huge and that was great. But just like Sagano, there's going to be a lot of teams to come that are much more equipped to expose them and kind of shed light on their weaknesses.
Orioles and the Tigers start a three-game series tonight. That's, 6:30 first pitch, which means Baltimore Bay 640. Baltimore Baseball tonight. It's Bone and Ryan Ripken at 5:30 right here on 105.7 The Fan. When we come back, though, hey, the Orioles, they beat a left-handed pitcher. But did they really, did they beat him? They just scored more runs than the opponent. We'll look back at the lineups evening against Mackenzie Gore next here on The Fan.
Well, it's natural. I mean, these guys are human beings swinging the bat the way they want to. The games aren't going the way we want to. We've had a tough time rotation. We just had two really good starts. We get good starts, we got a good shot. And these guys are going to start swinging the bat better.
So that was Brandon Hyde after the game last night, and they have gotten back-to-back good starts, Sagano and Povich. They went against a lefty last night, Mackenzie Gore, a lefty that's been pitching very well. And they won, but they didn't exactly hit. They got four hits and a walk in six innings off of Gore. They only got one more base runner the rest of the game. Yeah. Two runs was enough, though. They win 2-1.
He's a hell of a pitcher, and they don't hit bad lefties, let alone good lefties. Thank God for said. Look, my if we're talking about my concerns for them, that is a god-awful bullpen, and they didn't do much damage to it. Like, now, part of it's because some of their starters went long, and again, that comes back to, how about somebody takes a walk? Mm-hmm. How about a couple guys have 8-pitch at-bats, and guess what? All of a sudden, you know, Mitchell Parker doesn't get to flirt with a damn complete game. But Bone and I talked about it a little bit yesterday. The moral victory chatter that Brandon Hyde was spewing coming off the game 2 loss in this series. I guess we've got it here. Him talking about, hey guys, don't ask me how we're going to compete with the Detroit Tigers. Like, we just won a game. Yeah. Let me have a smoke and enjoy a bourbon. Like, don't you go throwing that harsh reality at me. How did we get there?
Hey,
well, how did we get there?
Here's Brandon Hyde after the game.
Definitely this weekend. We're facing some premier arms and a really good bullpen in Detroit. I'm going to enjoy this one first, if you don't mind. These have been few and far between, so I'm going to have a little something to, Diet Coke and enjoy the flight to Detroit. But thank you for reminding me about Detroit's rotation.
That just sounds like a copy and paste quote from 2019, guys, where it's like, oh man, it's so great that we picked up a win for the first time in a while after getting our brains beat in.
Let me savor this 2-1 win against a 70 win team. Like, that team is not winning. That team might win 73 games over there on the other side of the beltway. They are in a rebuild. And wait a minute, guys, let me savor you know what that sounded like to me? And again, talked about this a little bit yesterday, talked about it with Tony Gwynn Jr. That sounded to me like a guy who knew if we get swept by the Nats and then we get swept by the Tigers, I might be fired before the Yankee series, mm-hmm. or I damn sure might be fired next Thursday on that off day after the Yankee series. That sounded like, to me, like a dude who really did want to have a stogie and a bourbon because he knows he probably bought himself at least another week on the job.
Yeah, respectfully.
By not getting swept by the bum-ass Nats.
Respectfully, I don't hear it like 2019. I hear it like a guy who knows he's about to get fired. Like, that's how I hear it. Like, I'm going to savor this win because they're few and far
but
between.
But to Bone's point, the idea that, I don't know if we can compete with those guys. How did we get here?
Yeah, that's a joke.
Don't sell me I got a 100-win competitive ball club and then make me listen to slop like that after you escape the Nats 2-1.
It can. To me, it's similar to what he was saying the night before when they lost by one run. Hey, the at-bats are getting better, man. I mean, you're pulling
that's a
for
joke.
The moral victory.
That's a joke. Don't give me moral victories.
Yeah, dude, if Cedric Mullins wasn't an aircraft carrier right now, they'd have like 3 wins. Hmm. The guy they buried, the guy they didn't want to have in their lineup down the stretch last year, the guy they didn't trust to hit up high over Adley, who was god-awful, and he's pretty bad now, too, and Gunner in a terrible slump, and Westy's on the IL. Without him, they would be lost.
And what a hell of an at-bat, by the way. And 9 pitches.
Stud.
And driving in that run. That was
But awful. This slump,
they got.
You can't tell me that even Brandon Hyde thinks they're a competitive baseball team.
They got 4 hits last night. 4! Like, come on. They had 4 base hits and somehow won a baseball game. Like, that's not going to play.
Don't make me, oh my God, we got to face Mize and we got to face Scooble. Oh, don't go putting reality in front of me. I'm just going to go talk to Mike about Mike's got it penciled out. I think Mike thinks we're okay. Now, this dude, I'm telling you, they got swept by the Nats, and then they only win 1 in Detroit, and they get swept by the Yankees. He was getting fired on Thursday, I strongly believe. He would be walking the plank then. And he still might walk the plank then, but I just don't buy anything about this franchise right now. I'm not buying anything.
They
the
seem
GM's
like they're
selling,
sleepwalking.
Anything the manager's selling, anything their young players are really doing, I'm not buying it.
It's just been such a low energy type of baseball where I just the team doesn't seem anywhere nearly as into it. It doesn't.
How is he not saying we better hit the ball damn well better against the Detroit Tigers? That is a better baseball team. Mm-hmm. That's an American League team that won playoff games that we haven't shown we can do yet. That's a measuring stick. We better take it like a measuring stick, and we better play with more emotion, more energy, and more pulse than we have all season. Instead, he's already kind of sloughing it like, well, I mean, that's going to be really tough. Like, let me enjoy this flight. Man, I'm done with all of them.
No emotion.
That's why you get none of my money. Yeah. You don't get my money, honey.
Even Jason.
No emotion. It's
even now, Chesapeake Bay Sox will get my money tonight.
Yeah.
Aberdeen Ironbirds.
But isn't he a minority owner of the Orioles? So the money's going to the same place, Jason. It's all the same pot. Yeah, I can make. He's a minority owner of the Orioles. It's all going to the same pot. That money's going to get funneled, Jason. He's taking your ticket money and funneling it to the Orioles.
What kind of budget you think? What do you think the operating budget is for the Chesapeake Bay Sox? They got so much gravy going on there that they're kicking some up to Uncle Ruby in the big club. Get out of here.
They've dumped a lot of money in that stadium.
They have. I'll tell you, Aberdeen's done, though. Aberdeen, it's over.
It's going to Frederick, right?
They haven't even extended the netting like you're obligated to do. They just stopped selling tickets to like 60% of the ballpark. When I tell you, like, there's like one concession stand open. Like, they ain't spending no money. Aberdeen is done with affiliated baseball.
Next year?
If they could move it to Frederick sooner, I think they would.
Yeah.
They could move it to Frederick for the next series, I think they would. Like, that homestand was, oh, boy.
How's that carpet?
Over. It ain't getting patched. I can tell you that much. If there's holes in it, it's staying holy.
Orioles win 2-1, and they're back in action against the Tigers tonight. It's a 6:40 first pitch. Baltimore baseball tonight. The Bone and Ryan Ripken, 5:30, right here on 105.7 The Fan. Coming up next, it's a Friday. Time for our best bets with the prop queen, Ariel Epstein, and our own Beltway Ben Hall. That's next here on The Fan.